You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your recap episode for this week's Valspar Championship. And joining me to break it all down, Greg Ducharme is here. Greg, what is up?
Happy to be here, Rick, as always. What a week at the Valspar, the snake pit. Sam Burns gets through the snake pit, and kind of easy through the snake pit today.
Yeah, he kind of made a lot of Sunday look easy. We'll talk about that. But also joining us, it's Kyle Porter, KP. Welcome.
I'm just hopeful that Rick's internet ejects him for another 5 minutes so me and Greg can just trade our asinine takes for a while. Yes. and show off how important Rick is to this podcast.
Well, that is always fun.
That's always appreciated. However, I'm rocking fiber optics now, so they better not go out for 5 minutes or else I'm going to have a big issue with my cable provider. Gentlemen, Samuel Hollins Burns gets it done at the Valspar Championship. He does it with a 3-under-63. It was, for the majority of the day, a two-horse race. And Greg, you kind of alluded to this. It kind of looked a little bit easy at times. He makes bogey on 18. That was really one of the only few blemishes, but at that point it was all said and done. Sam Burns' first PGA Tour victory.
Well, you know, I thought, and the most of the day kind of looked like it was going to be a back and forth battle between Keegan and Sam Burns. And when these guys got off to the start that they did, making a couple for Sam Burns, making birdie at 1 and 2, it kind of looked like the the struggles with a 54-hole lead or a 36-hole lead that Sam Burns, especially Keegan, that they have kind of faced in their career. For Keegan, I'm not sure if it was 54 or 36-hole leads, but he was 1 of 6 in closing those out. So there's been, I think it was 36-hole leads. So he's had a little bit of trouble in that sense. And you wondered at the start of the day what was going to happen. Well, Sam Burns goes out and birdies 1 and 2. Keegan birdies number 1 as well. And they were kind of off to the races. And from that point on, you really got the sense that it was going to be these two guys coming down the stretch, which was cool to see because they're really fun guys to watch. I like watching Keegan. Not everybody does under pressure, but when Keegan gets under pressure, it's quite interesting. And I find it to be entertaining. Again, not everybody does, but Sam Burns just has such a simple
anybody
approach.
Does.
Entertaining is not an adjective I would have used, but I'm
well,
glad.
Well, look,
it was
I mean, we'll talk about Keegan. I'm excited to talk about Keegan, but watching Sam Burns go through this, go through his routine, the conversations he was having with his caddy, it was really high quality stuff. And I was really impressed with what he did on the second nine. And every time he got down, he just continued to hit great shots and he rolled in great putts. He's kind of the prototypical PGA Tour player. But a student of mine last week was talking about these young guys on the PGA Tour and what they look like. He's like, they all just ball strike it to death. And it feels like none of them can putt. It feels like all the great young players are on team no putt. And I was kind of agreeing with him, but Sam Burns slipped my mind. And Sam Burns is a great putter, a classic young PGA Tour player with all of his ball striking ability, but he really can putt as well.
In terms of oxygen spent on the First Cut Podcast, if we were to rank the golfers, Jordan Spieth certainly near the top, Bryson DeChambeau certainly up there as well. But KP, Sam Burns gets a lot of run on this show because of the upside. We've talked about it countless times this year. We've seen him be in the final group. We've seen him hold 54-hole leads. This is the first time that he actually ends up breaking through. But this shouldn't be, I don't think, all that much of a surprise.
No. And I think especially so when you consider his pedigree. I was looking back at some of his amateur stuff and it's, you know, Haskins finalist. It was him. That was the year that Thornberry won it with Ole Miss. And then Wyndham Clark was the other finalist after he transferred from Oklahoma State to Oregon. he was SEC Player of the Year. He was really good in college. I don't think he was ever on a Walker Cup team, but it might have had to do with like when he turned pro after his sophomore year. And he's been good as a pro. I thought it was funny. I don't know if you guys saw his transcript from Saturday, but somebody said, was your last win in college? And he was like, no, I won as a professional, but I don't remember where. And I was like, like you have one win as a pro and you don't remember where it was. Like, how is that possible? But I like Burns. I don't think that if you just look at his numbers, like if you take his name out of it and just look at like his, like statistical, like in-depth stats, his upside is not crazy. I think he could be a really like solid player on the tour for a really long time. Cause I think that like, look, half the deal is being confident, right? Is mentally just like hanging in. And he talked about that with Amanda Baleonis afterward, just like, hey, I learned from Torrey. I learned from Riviera, and I stayed in it on, you know, when they got to the back nine. And I think that that's the stuff that like, you know, you can't throw that in a spreadsheet, right? Like you can't learn that from datagolf.com or whatever. Rick Run, go ahead.
Kyle, what do you think holds him back? If you look at the data, what do you think makes the upside not all that crazy?
He's not an elite iron player. He's fine. He's been good this year, but if you look at his last, we've got kind of 2.5-ish years of measured rounds. He's not even like a zero iron player. And so you can improve that. Like you can work up to that. But the guys that like with the Morikawa Cantlay type upside, they've always been elite iron players, right? Like,
yeah, I agree with that.
He's not in that category. That he could win 5 times on the, he could win a major, but it's not like in the Morikawa conversation.
For those wondering about that other professional win from Sam Burns, it was the 2018 Savannah Golf Championship. That is a Korn Ferry Tour event. And Greg,
he beat Scott Langley.
Scott Langley finished third. Roberto Castro finished runner-up. Curtis Luck was a T5. Sungjae Im T8 that week. Cam Champ T11. Yeah, there's some
Sungjae names. Sungjae was like 15 years old, I think.
Yeah, just popping up top 15s all the time. I'm glad Kyle brought up that interview afterwards, Greg, because he said specifically when they got to the back nine, they just started trusting the process again. They just stayed in their process, which is something he admitted did not happen in some of these previous occasions where he had gotten himself in contention, whether he was holding the lead at Riviera, whether it was the final group with Patrick Reed at Torrey Pines, whatever it is. He admitted that he had gotten away from the process, and they worked really hard here on Sunday to stay in the moment and to stay doing their thing.
If you look at what guys have done of late on the PGA Tour and what has led to their victory, I think of Stuart Sink. If Sam Burns was watching Stuart Sink win at the RBC Heritage, he would have seen the same thing. This is another guy who has a 54-hole lead. He also had a 36-hole lead as well, just like Sam did this week. And all of a sudden, he sticks to the process. And that seems to be the answer when you get under pressure. What do you do under pressure? What's different about being under the gun? What's different about Sunday than Thursday, Friday, and Saturday? And the guys that close the deal, the answer is nothing. Right. You do exactly what you do on a Thursday round, a Friday round, a Saturday round. You do exactly the same thing. You commit to that process. It's easier said than done. It's a very challenging thing, and it takes some teamwork between a caddy and a professional. It's very easy when Keegan Bradley hits it in the water at number 13 to say, okay, this is over. I just won and relax your mind. And he didn't do that, which is impressive because it can get away. Keegan gets up and down at, what was the next one?
14.
At 14.
Yeah. Keegan gets up and down at 14. If he makes a putt there, you could have had a couple of swings. And Sam was in position where it didn't really matter. If Keegan made a couple of those short putts that he missed coming down the stretch, it didn't really matter. And so I thought that was impressive, and it's a sign of commitment to that process.
You know who You know who Burns reminds me of, just in the way, not his game really, but in the way he carries himself, is Daniel Berger. Daniel Berger. Like Berger's just kind of what he, I feel like Berger is, and they sort of, they don't really look alike, but they sort of have the same, like, you know, beard and just like, I feel like they're both pretty, like they can get pretty intense. And I feel like they kind of give off this aura of like, I don't really care about anything else except for what I'm doing, you know? And that was, I've liked Burns for a while. I thought he was very endearing. Like he was fired up when he should have been fired up. It wasn't like the, you know, I hate to keep going back to it, but like the Ricky Fowler, like, oh, I'm just, you know, whatever, just staying in my lane. Like he had a good like rhythm. Like he understood what was happening and how it was playing out. I really like him a lot. And I think I love the way he carries himself on the course. I thought it was pretty impressive.
I see Kyle in that. I see some Dustin Johnson in the way he carries himself and in interviews too. I mean, I don't know what win was my win. That kind of answer is something you'd hear out of DJ. But the thing is, and there's a brilliance to it where it's to your point about the focus on what's going on in the moment, which I think Dustin Johnson has a real keen ability to do. He's not worried about losing a 36 hole lead or a 54 hole lead. He's not worried about the failures. He's worried about what's right in front of him. And I think that aura is there. And it's kind of a simplistic approach. And that's kind of where I draw that connection.
I actually have a bone to pick with you, Kyle, if you don't mind here for a second.
Yeah, let's go. Let's hear it.
I thought you were very cowardly with your Vince Carter.gif this week. Okay. When did you send it out? Set like two holes to go.
So listen, you know when I wanted to send it out was after 14.
Can I guess? Okay, I was gonna say it was over when he decided to lay up on 14, did not take the risk because he didn't like the limb and the angle that he had, and then he stuffed one to 18 inches or whatever. That's when it was over. So that's when you're saying you wanted to send it.
As soon as his ball came to rest on 14 on the approach, I always have like this. Pinprick of like, okay, it's Vince time. And that was it. And I was cowardly. I didn't send it out then. I should have. You're right, Rick. You got me. I was a coward. It was soft.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay, Keegan Bradley is going to finish a solo runner-up, 14 under par, as we mentioned, for the vast majority of the day. This was a two-horse race. When both of these golfers stepped on the tee, Greg, of 13, they were tied. Sam Burns hits a safe shot. He's on the green. He's dancing. He's far away. And Keegan finds the water, eventually makes a double. He compounds that error with a missed four-foot par putt on 15. Then he hits the shot of the day on 17, his last gasp of hope. He stuffs one to 5 feet on 17 and misses that 5-foot birdie putt without Mark here. I will say, you got to make putts on Sunday. Keegan did not do that.
It was, Mark would be right here, but I was watching the statistics. These are the moments where you're putting. Keegan's putting this week was better. I mean, I know yesterday he kind of struggled on the greens for the most part, but earlier in the week it was better. And for much of the day today, I was watching where he was in the field and strokes gained putting for the week. He was positive most of the day putting today, and he was 22nd, I think was the best I saw in the field. And then all of a sudden he missed the one on 15. That's the one I was referring to earlier where Sam Burns he came up well short on his approach. Keegan hit a great bunker shot and he's right there with a chance to, you know, make it a tournament again almost immediately after hitting it in the water and then losing the next hole too. And he's got a chance to make it interesting again and he didn't. And that was kind of lets the wind out of your sails. And it's those moments when you have an opportunity. Can you overcome the fears that you have? Can you overcome the demons of how much you've struggled in your career on the greens? And Keegan really has struggled ever since, say, 2013 2014. It was really in 2014 he made a switch. He started to tinker with other putters, getting out of the belly putter, and the statistics really plummeted. He was as good as 35th on tour in strokes gained putting, and after his rookie year, he was basically between 35th and 50th for the next 3 years, which was really pretty good. And he was a really good player and had an ability to win. And in 2011, he was rookie of the year. And then he started to switch, and all of a sudden, he falls out of the top 140 almost every year since. I think it was every year since, and that still continues to this day. But he was on the upside. I was really high on Keegan coming into this week for that reason. I think it was since it was either I was on your site, Rick. I was calculating where he has been in strokes gained putting, and it was either at the beginning of the year or since the Arnold Palmer Invitational. I can't remember which one I did. I think it was Arnold Palmer Invitational. He was gaining nearly a tenth to the field in strokes gained putting, 0.09, which was really pretty good for him. And he was showing out throughout the week. It was really showing out today even. And then he just started to miss some short putts. And it speaks to me to his belief. I don't think Keegan's belief in himself and his ability to make those putts is still there. And that's why when the moment gets really big, that area of his game fades away.
I kind of disagree here a little bit because I thought that it was – I thought he putted well enough throughout – I hear what Greg's saying, but to me it was the shot on 13. I mean, what is he doing there? Was he going at that pin? Was he – was there – like, did he have the wrong club? Like, I don't really – like, you are what you are. Like, Keegan can't – like, all of a sudden on Sunday rely on the putt. Not that – that's not what you were saying that he was doing, but – he knows he's going to have to ball strike it for 72 holes to win the golf tournament. And when you do that on 13, you're not like, are you going to be able to putt your way back into it? I don't know. It's just, that's a difficult thing for him to do.
But you just apply a little bit of pressure. I agree with you. The shot on 13 is the turning point, but you have that opportunity to get within two and you're in the snake pit. You're heading into the snake pit, which Sam Burns has struggled with. And if you're within two, you have a chance in one hole to erase that lead completely.
Yeah.
In fact, it happened already during the day. So you had an opportunity. If the putt on 15 goes in, you're still in the mix. And it let him down. But Kyle, you sent out a tweet about Keegan, how his hands are getting. I think it was you about his hands getting lower and lower.
I thought they said it on the broadcast too.
So Nolan Up talked about his hands getting lower and lower as it goes.
Like he was going to hit himself in the knees.
Yeah, that's the one. I for some reason thought that was you. So anyway, that happens to people on the when you get nervous. It happens to all golfers of all levels. You start getting nervous, or it starts getting windy. The tendency is to bend over more. And when Keegan starts with his hands as low as he does already, and you bend over more, it looks really extreme. And that leads to what happened on 13.
Yeah.
And he blocks it to the right. And that's what happens when you start to bend over a little more. You don't quite have the same mobility, and you have a tendency of standing out of the shot. And it's exactly what happened to him there. And he wasn't the same after that. I agree with you there.
Burns also, like, there are times where he looks like Albert Bell, like when on his follow through, like it is. I mean, they have like the swings are so flat. I mean, and especially for Burns, it's more on the follow through. I guess for Keegan, it's more on the like, you know, coming through the zone. But I guess my final point, we can go back to Rick, but my final point on Keegan is like he lost a stroke to the field on Sunday on his approach shots. Like, if you tell me on Sunday morning, hey, Keegan's going to lose a stroke to the field on his approach shots, I'm like, there's no chance. Like, he has a 0% chance of winning. And so I think, like, small picture, I agree with you, Greg. Bigger picture, that was sort of my point.
So let me go bigger picture here. And this is – we can move on. But I think this is important because this is the blueprint for Keegan Bradley. He gained – nearly 13 shots from tee to green. He was a positive putter, just less than one stroke over four rounds. That's all he needs. And Greg, this actually kind of goes back, as we say, bigger picture. This is going to be his fourth out of five stroke play events that he has gained strokes putting. The one we don't have the data from was the Zurich, where him and Steele finished fourth. So presuming they putt pretty well, this is a very good trend for Keegan Bradley. Now it's going to look a lot worse when the lights are shining bright on Sunday afternoon and he misses a couple of shorties. It's going to look bad, but this is the blueprint.
It's improving. I completely agree. And he's hitting, I mean, he came in third this week, approaching the green, losing nearly a shot today on Sunday, which probably comes all from the one shot on 13. He probably loses a whole shot there, or very nearly. So when Keegan putts to a zero, he is similar, not quite at the level of a Colin Morikawa, but he's going to be in the mix to win a tournament, right? Probably, I mean, he could win a major, but he's going to be in contention to win every single week if he gains strokes on the greens. He will be around the lead, which is a really good sign for him. So if you're Keegan, you look at most of this tournament as a huge positive and a huge step in the right direction. And there were many moments today where he stepped up. He stepped up this week and hit some really big shots. You think about the hole out on Friday night on number 9. You think about the chip in yesterday at 14. Those are really big shots. The birdie putt today at 9 was huge. And so those are the things that I hope Keegan draws on. And I hope he's kind of stocking his memory bank with these positive moments. And in the coming weeks, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see him holding a trophy.
He did win a major.
That was a long time ago.
He was
one for one in majors.
I know. Better career, Sam Burns or Keegan Bradley in 30 years?
I mean, I have
Keegan
to go
only
with
have
it.
Two wins? No, he's got more. How many wins does Keegan?
No, he's got four.
He's got like four or five.
He's got four. He I was four. Looking at it earlier. Yeah. You got four in a major. If you're Sam Burns, you're in your third year on the PGA Tour.
And a WGC.
Yeah. Which are, they're big. BMW playoff event. You thinking Keegan?
I think it's Keegan.
If Sam Burns has a better career than that, that's a really, really good career. A major, a playoff event, a WGC, and four wins. If Burns beats that, it's great.
I think he has the game for that.
No, I really?
Yeah, I do.
No.
I do.
I don't. I like Burns a lot. I don't think he has a game for that. So Data Golf's comps for Sam Burns at this age, Cam Smith, that makes sense. Patrick Reed, that actually makes sense. But Reed started like really taking off at age 24, 5, 6, 7, 8. Kevin Na, Michael Kim, probably don't want that one.
Really Ishikawa.
So yeah, I like Burns a ton. I think Keegan will have a better career.
I just think we're going to find out so much about in the next 3 or 4 years of who Sam Burns, like he could continue to get better, right? He doesn't have to be what he is.
I hope
right
he does.
Now.
Yeah. I would love it if on the Ryder Cup team for the US, it was Burns, it was Homa, it was Berger, guys like that. But I mean, there's only, 12 spots and there's like 28 guys we talk about every week.
Look, here's my point with Burns. And I think with Keegan's major, for Sam Burns to beat that, he's going to have to probably win 8 or 10 times if he doesn't win a major, or he's going to have to win a major, which again, I think he can do. But I look at him in a progression. And when you look at Data Golf and you compare his 3 years on tour, which were really 2.5 in, you're looking at a guy who was really struggling with his iron play, like you talked about before. But I mean, he's 34th this year on tour. And the golf swing, I think, really promotes that. I mean, he was 10th this week in proximity to the hole, and it didn't seem like an aberration. It didn't seem like it was something that was difficult to do. So if he's becoming the player that he really is, and the first 2 years on tour were a learning curve for him, with his ability on the greens, all 3 years he's been a top 30 putter on the PGA Tour. And I think that's a separator from him and some of these other young players, and it's a huge separator between he and Keegan. So if he can hit the ball like he is this year, if that's really the norm for him, then he'll have a better career than Keegan. If this year is just a really hot ball striking year and it all falls off, then Keegan will have a better career. But I really think that it's more towards, I think this is who he is. I don't think this year is the aberration.
That's a fair point.
3 years is hard. I mean, not everybody comes out the way that Hovland and Morikawa and Wolf do. I mean,
for sure,
there should be a learning curve on tour. Some guys, we're just blessed to see some guys that think differently.
We mentioned that Keegan Bradley finished second in the field in strokes gained tee to green, 12.8. The only guy who gained more than Keegan was not Sam Burns, who won. It was not Victor Hovland, who finished T3. It was not Cameron Tringale, finished T3. KP, it was Justin Thomas, who lost nearly 6.5 strokes with his putter, which is, he does it, and it's often hard to do. And then you combine that with the fact that he finished T13. Imagine losing 6.5 strokes putting over 4 days and still finishing T13. It's got to be frustrating.
Did you see his 72nd hole?
I did not.
Yeah.
So he misses like a, what was it, Greg? Four footer, three footer?
Yeah. Yeah. I can get footer? You the.
It was, I have it right here. It was a. Four feet. He missed a 4.5
footer.
And then
he made a 7-footer coming back for par. Yes.
Right.
That summed up his week right there, because he had, Rick, I looked it up. He had as many eagles. I tweeted this out. He had as many eagles as he made putts over 10 feet. That's almost impossible to do.
I was going to say not possible.
Because, I mean, you almost have to say that again because it's so hard to comprehend.
He had
how
as many
putts
eagles.
Over 10 feet? Oh, yeah. Okay, so 3 and 3?
Yeah.
Wow.
But I think only one of the eagles was over 10 feet. He had one at exactly 10 feet. So I'm kind of cheating, but verbiage over 10 feet, 3 putts over 10 feet, 3 eagles. It's almost like I challenge Justin Ray to find a tournament in which somebody has had more eagles than they've had putts made over 10 feet. 10 is not a, I mean, 20, sure, but 10? I mean, he should have used, like, remember when Siwoo putted with his 3-wood at the Masters?
Yeah,
I do.
If JT had just subbed in Siwoo with the 3-wood, he would have finished in the top 5 of the event. I am convinced that Siwoo with his 3-wood would have putted better than Justin Thomas did. But I mean, it means he's probably going to win Wells Fargo by like 8.
So, okay. So Justin Thomas has done this, Greg. Just 5 starts ago, he lost 5.8 strokes putting at the Genesis. Well, he tends to figure it out pretty quickly. His next start after that, he was a 0 putter. His next start after that, he gained 1.6 and he won the Players Championship. There was one other occasion where he lost at least 5. It was here, the 2019 Travelers. The next start, 0 putter. The next start, he lost one. The next start, he wins. I mean, he tends to figure this out pretty quickly. He doesn't generally have a bunch of weeks in a row where he's a losing putter.
And he has been doing some pretty good work this year on the putting. I mean, it really has improved from last year. The last couple of weeks, Masters, I don't think was great. I know we don't have official strokes gain data for that. This week was really bad. But before that, I mean, it was a lot better. I want to say entering the week, he was 53rd in strokes gain putting on the PGA Tour, and he wasn't 3-putting a lot. It was really nice form. And so this was a little concerning to me. And when you see the first round where he loses 2.6, my thought was, well, he got in under par, and then Friday is going to be a great round. He's going to have a great round.
We talked about this, Rick and I did.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure I would have put just about any amount of money that you guys would have talked about that. Because, I mean, that was the story, right? That was the guy you're looking at saying, okay, he's gonna win.
He was 12-1. He was 12. But and think about this, Greg. I'm looking at his numbers right now. Like JT, think about, we've been talking about Sam Burns, and he's a really good putter, right? That's kind of what you've been going to. And I agree. JT's pretty much the exact same, like numbers-wise, he's the exact same as Sam Burns. And then you throw in, you basically are combining Sam Burns and Keegan Bradley, right? And JT's better tee to green than Keegan is, but you're combining that into one, and it's JT. And so that's, I mean, Rick's right. Like he might win the PGA. He might not. He might win like 6 in a row. Who knows?
I mean, you hit the ball like this, you hit the ball like this and it can go one of two ways. It can either get so frustrating that you, it can get so frustrating that you kind of lose your, you lose your wits, you lose your way mentally, and it can leak into other areas of your game. If it's that frustrating of a problem and your time gets allocated, because look, PGA Tour players don't look at this like we look at this. They have a different perspective, which is quite obvious.
Thankfully.
And they're really worried. They're not thinking, oh, if I just go out tomorrow, I'm going to putt better, because that's what, you know, that's what the guys regression on the First Cut podcast say. They're like, well, how am I going to improve my putting? I need to go work on this. And so you wonder, is it going to distract him? Or is this going to, is this something he's able to write off? In the past, it's been something he's able to write off. So that would say, based on the regression model, that yeah, he's going to win probably the next at least three events that he plays.
He is. I mean, the good thing is about him, he's very on brand, right? I mean, he continues to be awesome from tee to green. He does have these weeks, and history has shown he bounces back pretty quickly. He is very much on brand with this. This is not an unusual week. We've seen it from him before. A couple of notables here. I want to run through these fairly quickly. KP, Victor Hovland. I don't want to call it the most quiet T3 of the week, but like, we didn't talk about him after round one, after round two, after round three. He just goes 69, 69, 68, 65 to finish T3. This was obviously good to see after Zurich, where we didn't really know what the state of his game was. And even into leading into the team event, we didn't really know where he was at. This is momentum we're starting to build with Victor.
Yeah. Do you ever get worried with Hovland that there's like he's just a top 10 machine and there's not a ton of win equity?
No.
Do you, Greg? Wins.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see, yeah, I could see that kind of continuing.
It's Puerto Rico and Mexico. It's not like.
It's hard to win everywhere on tour.
I think him and Morikawa are kind of the opposite, right? Like Morikawa, especially lately, it's either win or miss the cut. Like
yeah, he's been a lot more volatile,
which is great. Like that's what you want to be. Maverick McNeely was talking about that on the No Line Up podcast. Like consistency sounds great until you're Tony Finau, right?
Yeah,
and
right. It went. Yeah, go ahead.
I think that's a little bit of the not concern. I mean, Hovland's only played what 50 tour events, not even maybe, and he's won twice. So that's premature, but yeah, I don't know. Like I'm curious if that becomes a thing over the next couple of years.
The one thing I'll say about that, Kyle, is he has had a lot of big noticeable mistakes in events. And so the story, while there is consistency in his finishing position, there's an inconsistency week to week within the tournament, where he'll make a nine or he'll make a triple and he'll fight his way back and contend like he did at Augusta National on his first hole. He made a triple and he still hung in there and played pretty well. So it's kind of peculiar in that sense. I wonder how often he'll be able to put all the pieces together. But you think about the comp, we're thinking Morikawa is going to be kind of like on a JT kind of a trajectory, where if he had in 5 years, if he had 14 wins on the PGA Tour and a major or another major, nobody would be surprised. But it would be very easy for Hovland not to do that. And if he had only three wins in 5 years, I think we might be a little disappointed. But as Rick said, it's hard to win everywhere. So I don't know how many times he's going to win. I don't trust the putting, and I still don't trust a short game. And those are some pretty big holes to have when it comes down to the actual being in the moment, having to do what you have to do to win. And it's not easy to do. And when those are your weaknesses, they get exposed under pressure.
Yeah, I think go ahead, Rick.
No, go ahead. I'm just going to throw stats at this, so I'll throw it on at the end.
I love it. I love it when you throw stats at stuff. I think some of it's the burden of expectation, right? Like, we're praising Sam Burns for getting his first win in 76 starts. And with Hovland, we're like, is he a winner? Which is dumb. Like, it's,
yeah.
Like, I realize I sound like an idiot, but also, like, you're a top 15 guy, right? Like you and this is it's the phenom. Maybe it's the Puerto Rico thing. Maybe it's just like everybody who, you know, like, and I know we joke about the Puerto Rico curse, but like, I don't know. Like you, and this is kind of what we talked about with Xander over the last couple of years. Like Xander hadn't won in what, over 2 years now. And it's like, are you a top 15 guy or not? And there's a million ways to define that. But I don't know. And I still think Hovland is one of the 15 best golfers in the world, but like maybe it's not for him going to be defined by winning big events. I don't know. Who knows?
It is the expectation to me, because you're looking at a guy who gets compared with Morikawa and Wolf, and we expect him to be a phenom. We expect him to, he's a phenom, right? So we expect him to have phenomenal results throughout his career. And that's why having two wins at this point isn't, it's not above our expectations. Whereas Sam Burns, we don't put him in that group of young stars. So when he wins, he's overachieving. And that is the difference between those two players and how we celebrate one and question the other, in my opinion.
I just got stuck in a rabbit hole of top 10 percentages and win percentages and stuff like that, trying to figure it out. So this is also going to include European Tour, but Hovland, I have at 52 starts, two wins, obviously 11 top 10s. That's 21%. To put that into perspective, Tony Finau's top 10 rate is 25% and 218 starts, one win. And his, and Xander Schauffele's top 10 rate is 26%. And then I clicked Rory's name. Now this is also going to include Euros.
Can I guess?
I want you to guess.
I think it's like 40.
Greg?
I guess 33.
49%.
Wow.
That's dirty.
Is insane.
He finishes half in the top 10 49% of the time he tees it up.
Yeah.
Rom is up there too. Rom's is nasty.
Yeah.
Rom's like in the 40s, I think.
He has not had a season worse than, hold on, let me sort this correctly. He has not had a season with a top 10% worse than 40% in 8 years. 2013, he played 23 times, had seven top 10s. That's only 30%. Like,
it's, that was an equipment change year. That's when he changed equipment.
Then he won two majors the next year.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm so embarrassed to guess 33%. It's embarrassing.
I almost said something like 60 or something, which in my head was like, "Oh, that's dumb." Like,
Now we have to do Tiger. Now this is a little skewed because obviously the last couple of years have not been great.
Yeah. 65.
Greg, over under 65.
Your database is 2015 on?
No, this is not my database. This is everything.
This is everything.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 55%.
55%, Greg Ducharme, wow, on the head.
All right, that makes up for the Rory one.
210 out of 397. 55%.
See, this is my point. Greg is Morikawa and I'm Hovland. He's way off on one and he nails the other. He gets it right. And I'm consistently wrong. I'm 10% off each time.
Real quick, Cameron Tregali finishes T3 and KP. This is one of my favorite stats via Justin Ray. Just became the all-time money leader on the PGA Tour. Asterisks, then you scroll down, you see what that means, without a victory, which is still very, very impressive.
He's kind of like poor man's Kuchar, right? Like he's okay. Just like he doesn't win. I mean, Kuchar obviously has won a lot, but he just racks it. He just makes a ton of money. I mean, it's not bad to be Cameron Tringali, right? What'd you say? He's won 14 something.
I think it was 13. Yeah. 13 and a half or something like that before this week. And then T3 money. So it's going to be around 14 million.
And he's having, I mean, look, like he's having the best year of his career, right? Like this is the best, I think this is the best season he's ever had. And, you know, speaking of Kuchar, I always go back to this. I've said it probably 100 times on here, but the quote about like, it takes 10 years to figure out the PGA Tour, to get assimilated, to understand what you're doing, where you're going, how you're traveling, which sounds like a huge learning curve when we compare it to like the Spieth JT stuff. But that's the reality for most guys, the Scott Langleys and Cameron Tringalis of the world. So yeah, I mean, you got to win at some point, but he's having a great season.
So this is my take on Cameron Tringale, because I think there is a real take to have here. In 2017, his driving distance was 280 yards, and he's kind of known for being a guy who chased distance. It went up to, in 2018, it went up to 289. So he's getting a little bit longer. In 2019, it went up to 296. Last year, for the first time, he cracked the 300 barrier, and it was 301.9. And this year it's above 300 again at 300.3. So he's a guy who's improved his distance, which is something that a lot of guys have done, and not a lot of guys have had success with it, with the exception of Bryson, who's really, really obvious. But when Tringale did it, it didn't lead to success right away, but he did what he had to do to basically survive. If he was hitting the ball 280 yards today, like he was in 2018, he wouldn't be competing, and he wouldn't be having this year, which is... he's on pace for his best year on the PGA Tour. He has had at least, he has So he earned $2 million in 2014. He's earned $1.5 million this year. So I think he's definitely on the rise. And you're starting to see when you chase distance how everything has to come together. And it's not just simply a distance thing, but distance is a big part of it. And he's now, this year, a really well-rounded player. Inside the top 51 in all the strokes gained categories except around the green, and he's gaining in all the categories for the year, for the PGA Tour season. So look, he's a well-rounded player who now has that asset of distance where he's able to compete. When you're at 300 yards, you can compete out there, and yeah, it's nice to see.
We have to do a betting card update. We have to do a one and done update, but gentlemen, let's do an official World Golf ranking update, courtesy of our friend on Twitter, Nosferatu. Any guesses, and tell me if you've seen this already, what Sam Burns will move to in the world rankings on Monday morning?
I haven't seen this. He was like 94th. So I bet he moves to 50th.
He was...
who's 94, right?
94, yes. Okay, so Kyle's guess is 50. Greg.
Oh man, I'm feeling
you don't want to follow this up.
Inconsistent, dramatically inconsistent right now. This could be a miscut. So he was 94th. He just won. I'm going to say he moves to 37th.
All right, split the difference. 44th is what he is going to move to, which means that 20% of the current top 50 players in the world are 25 years or younger. The game is young.
Say that again.
20% of the current top 50 players in the world are 25 or younger.
That's crazy. That's a lot.
That is a lot. 25
is young. It's like if you play all 4 years, it's like 2 years out of college, 3 years out of college.
The other official world golf ranking thing. Go ahead.
Well, if you're a top 50 guy, you're not playing all 4 years. So that's, I'm the idiot, but go ahead.
But if you play 3 years and a year on Korn Ferry, right? Yeah. You don't. So yeah, it's not a lot of years. It's not a lot. Not a lot of time.
How many did JT play? How many years was he at Bama? Two?
I want to say it was two. I believe it was two. And then he played a year on Korn Ferry.
Yeah. So he was, yeah. Okay.
At least two, because he was Haskins Award in 2020 or 2012, and then he won on the national championship team in 2013. So at least two. Other thing, Rory will be ranked 15th tomorrow morning, which is, we continue to go through this, on his way down, he's now like for the first time in this many thousand days or whatever. Like it's just, at least he's going back to Quail Hollow. Maybe he can get some vibes there.
So I think we've talked about this a bunch. We lose sight of we have this linear progression of guys. It's like, Victor Hovland's better than Sam Burns, and Cantlay is better than Victor Hovland, and JT is better than Cantlay. And it's like, that's not really how it goes. Like, there's guys that are like here, and then there's guys that are here, and like we do it linearly, and it's not linear. Like, John Rahm is way better than Patrick Reed, right? And Patrick Reed's ranked 7th in the world.
Right.
Or 8th in the world. And Rory historically is way better than whoever he's ranked next to, Sungjae. Like, way, like standard deviations better. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think sometimes when we talk about, like, we do it all by world rankings, and even if you want to do it by like strokes gained or data golf or Rick Run Good or whatever.
Nice point. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. It is not linear. And I think we do a disservice to the John Rahms and the JTs and the DJs and the Rorys of the world when we talk about it linearly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, you got to find out what is a player, who are they really, and then where are they in relation to that? Because guys are the never
existential questions from Greg.
What is a player?
Yeah, you're never who you really. You're never playing to your exact statistical profile, I guess is how you can say this. So there's a guy. Your averages. Yeah. You have averages in everything, and you're expected to perform somewhere around the averages, but you never perform there. And that's how the average is. You're better than that or you're worse than that. It's very rare that you're average. It's just like anyone at home who's playing, who's a 5 handicap. Well, there are days where you play like a scratch and there are days where you play like a 15, but you very rarely play like a 5. It doesn't mean that you go out and shoot 5 over, but you add them all up. And at the end of the day, you end up with an average, and it's very different than a mode. The mode and the average are probably very different. So I agree with you, Kyle. He is far better than all of these players. And with a great week or a great 2 weeks, he'll be right back to where he belongs. He's just got to get some things sorted out in his game.
Do you have Rahm's top 10s in front of you, Rick? Percentage?
Sure. Give me a 10 vamp for me for 15 seconds.
Is Rahm in the field this week? I think he is.
Yes, he is.
Rahm, Bryson, Rory, JT. It's going to be awesome.
Oh, this number. His number is big. So I have him at 120 starts.
Yeah.
He has made the cut in 107. That's 89%. His top 10%, 51%.
Yeah. It's dirty. He's freaking good. Like, underrated good.
See, the miscuts. So what I wonder what the percentage is if you go of when he makes the cut, what the percentage is of top 10s. It's probably easy math. It improves on 51, obviously. But he's just the king on Saturday and Sunday of charging up a leaderboard. And if he doesn't have it on Thursday and Friday, but he makes the cut, he runs on the weekend.
I don't disagree, but he also wins a lot.
Oh yeah, of course. Like, I'm not saying he's a backdoor top 10. It's just that he gets in his bad weeks, he still finishes T8. He always has a way to get there.
For sure. This is sort of my point. Like, he's got twice as many wins, three times as many wins as Cantlay in about the same number of starts. I'm just completely making numbers up, but off the top of my head, Cantlay's got like 110 starts and 3 wins, and Rahm's got like whatever 120 starts and 8 wins, 9 wins, something like that worldwide.
Well, worldwide, he's got 12.
12. There you go. So 4 times as many wins as Patrick Cantlay, who's like the 8th ranked. This is that's my entire point. Is like Cantlay's ranked 8th in the world, and Rahm has 4 times as many wins in the same number of starts.
Right. And Rory has 18 wins.
I don't know why I'm yelling about John Rahm when he hasn't played in like 2 weeks.
It's okay. Also, if you throw out the missed cuts, Greg, it moves him to 57%.
Right. It's so impressive.
Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do our odds and ends, which includes our betting cards and our one and done update. I'm making that sound more exciting than it actually is. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And we're back. Quick update on the betting cards. I won the week, 20% ROI. And producer Jacob's note in here says, Rick's matchups bail him out. That's the point, Jacob. That's the whole point. That didn't bail me out. That's the strategy. It's messed up, man.
That is messed up. Congratulations, Rick.
Thank you. They were no sweats, too. Keegan over Gary Woodland, that was like a 30-shot difference. And Brandon Hagee was a sweat. He made the cut, and Mark Hubbard did not. Those were the two matches.
I had some guys that some top 20s, like Griot and Doug Gim and Chris Kirk, who were in like the top 12 after day one, and then they missed the cut. I was like, what are we doing, guys?
Kirk played his last two holes like six over or something on Friday.
Doug Gim actually hit the ball better than JT on Thursday and Friday and missed the cut somehow.
And then also, what was the other one? Griot almost pulled the first round leader to miss cut, but he was like third and then missed the cut or something like that.
Yeah. Brutal. Not stuff. Good.
One and done update. So let's start where we always do, down at the bottom, which is where Coach resides. He started the week with 2.4 million, Greg, and he used your client, Adam Hadwin, and he got $0. So he's still at 2.4 million.
Yeah, the Adam Hadwin thing has turned out to be quite short-lived. I fired him.
I'm actually glad you're not his coach at this point. It would look bad on you.
Do you have dual citizen? Are you a President's Cup team assistant, Greg?
No. I'm all American. Look, the only thing here, and I mean that in an extremely humble way, but Hadwin, I expected to kind of get on a heater, and it hasn't happened. So that thing has ended very quickly. And I think there's going to be a day coming up soon here where he comes back in and all of a sudden the heater happens, but it happens so far past my prediction that I can't even bring it up because it's just, well, you said that 3 years ago, it's something like that. So look, I still think that he's got the right coach and he's working on the right things. I just think he's a little farther off than I originally thought.
Producer Jacob is trying to extend past coach, and he is on the verge of breaking through 3 million. He has $2,999,357, but he got JTSGT2G'd. He had Justin Thomas, and he did that thing where he was awesome from tee to green and lost six strokes putting, so he got $127,000 out of him. KP, I don't know. Would you be what would be the amount that if Justin Thomas got you, you'd be like, all right, that's fair.
Probably 250.
That's probably right.
What's 250 is like a top eight, top depending on the tournament, top six.
Yeah. And if you get 250,000 every week, you'll end with 12.5 million, which is certainly going to be enough to win this one and done. So
yeah. I think JT is a guy you're hoping to have, you know, an extra comma in there.
Well, I don't think you want for sure. Yeah. Like,
right. I know it's hard to do, but you're picking these guys. You're hoping that they, I mean, 250, if you're on the average, if you're getting the average with JT, you're expecting him to earn above average amounts. So
but that's my point, is like the floor for him is the average. I sound like Michael Jordan. Okay. The floor is the ceiling.
Not everyone can pick Justin Thomas when he gets 2.1 million at the Players Championship, Greg. I think that's, I think it's
2.7.
Oh, even better. 2.7. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. It's the worst.
Yeah.
Should we combine Jacob? So if we combine Jacob and Coach, they have 5.4 million, and that would still be $700,000 behind you, Greg. Maybe we should just let those two combine bankrolls.
Yeah, I'm. I mean, I could be open to a rule change here.
Jacob's look, always open to rule changes. So
yeah, especially when they're in his favor, so you could get an extra 2.4.
Here we go.
Is the commissioner about to get sort of outvoted by the player council?
This is the PGA Tour. This is the PGA Tour, and Rick is Rory. He's the new president. We run the league. Commissioner Jacob, that's true.
I'm in service to you guys. For sure. I do the negotiations. I bring it back to my players. I'm looking out for my guys, and I'm making sure that you guys get what you need. Right. I'm going to look out.
If you were doing Jay Monahan's job, we'd have a microphone sponsor. We'd have a cord sponsor. We'd have a headphone sponsor. We'd have a lighting sponsor, a paint sponsor. We'd have an indoor plant sponsor.
We do have Sonos, who is the official audio partner of the First Cut podcast.
Official, they didn't even pay for today,
and congratulations.
You got to start somewhere.
We need an official artificial palm tree sponsor. That's IKEA. I had something else about this. Producer Jacob. What was I thinking about, Producer Jacob?
How I picked Abe Anser 2 weeks ago, and now he gets a solo fifth for Kyle, because that also is keeping me up at night.
Yeah, that's tough, man. That's tough. Yeah. Greg is $3 million clear of Jacob. Greg took Corey Connors this week, $65,291. Not the result you were looking for, Mr. Ducharme.
Nope. I'm quite disappointed. I thought he was just on such a heat. It was so perfect for him this week. So I was really happy with the pick. It just didn't quite come to fruition. And I feel like I'm in the basement. I know that I'm 3 million ahead of Jacob, but I feel like I'm in the basement. So I got my eye on Kyle, and I'm trying to do everything I can to at least get on the podium this year. And Corey kind of let me down. I checked the sheet, and Kyle has Abraham Anser with a solo fifth. And now it's like back-to-back weeks. I feel like I'm maybe, holding steady or at least gaining grounds. Like last week with Louis and Charles, I thought for sure I'm gaining ground. I look up at the board, and I just lost in a playoff to Kyle Porter. And it reminds me of trivia round one all over again. So I'm not in the best mood.
Greg has his eye on Kyle. Kyle has his eye on Mark, because with his $282,000 that he got from Abraham Anser, he is a mere $29,000 behind. What did he call himself? The one and done King Slayer? I don't know what he called himself.
The Rob Bolton Slayer.
He allegedly
beat Rob Bolton in a one and done.
That's right. I knew it was something like that. And KP, you, my friend, are in a full-on heater. Six events, 3.2 million.
I think I've taken the most zeros this year because I've picked the most people that I like. I've picked the most
dupes.
Yeah, duplicates. But yeah, my last, what is that, 6 weeks has been, it's like a DJ at the end of 2020 type run.
Right. Yep. And you've shot 80, 80, 78 a couple of times and taken a bunch of penalty strokes.
I got DQ'd a couple of times. Yeah. It wasn't even 80s. It was just DQs.
You just make a putter change and all of a sudden.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't, even after the first couple of rounds, I was kind of dubious about Anser because he wasn't hitting it that well. He even talked about that. He talked about it in, I read his either Thursday or Friday transcript, and he was like, my irons are not very good right now. And the numbers said that as well. And he kind of just hung in until the end. I kept waiting for, I thought he would end up fading to like T13 or something, but he just hung in all the way. And that's kind of who he is a little bit though. Like, I feel like he just kind of hangs around.
This is an example of when the putter doesn't cool off after one, two, or three rounds. He lost a stroke on approach. He gained 9.3 with the flat stick. He led the field. Sometimes it just does not regress, and you get a great finish. So,
imagine if Anser had putted for JT this week.
You could have tweeted out Vince Carter on Saturday morning.
Secretariat at Belmont stuff.
Not to derail us. Is that the oldest standing? So Secretariat, whatever that, I don't know what the official time was. Is that like the oldest, longest standing record You know what I mean? Like most records are now modern day because athletes are bigger, stronger, faster. Like this has got to be of things that have not changed. Like that track size has not changed. That's got to be like one of the greatest accomplishments ever.
Wasn't isn't there like a triple jump record that allegedly will never be broken according to like track people? Somebody should look that. The producer Jacob should look this up. I think somebody in like the 70s or 80s had like some triple jump that was like, I think I read Gladwell on this one time talking about how like it was a joke. Like it'll never be touched.
Do you have something, Rick?
1995, the triple jump record, the world record, both men and women date back to 1995, which is kind of interesting. Jonathan Edwards did it and Inessa Kravitz did it. We've just got our first triple jump reference here on the First Cut podcast. It is interesting that both men and women in 1995, what happened? I wonder what happened there.
I'm sure there's something that explains it, but are you including sports records like are just individual records, because Wayne Gretzky's got some scoring records that will ever be touched.
His actually I think benefit from the modern game, so his will never be touched because goalies are so much different. They were stand-up goalies, they didn't really play all that well, the pads were a lot smaller, so the rules of the game have kind of kept his records the same. But most things with like Usain Bolt, right, like things like that where it's just straight on athletes getting bigger, stronger, faster, breaking records, you think they're going to continue to be broken. The Secretariat one is shocking that it has not been broken yet.
Yeah, the only thing about the hockey stuff, I agree with you, the goalies have gotten a lot better, but many of the other rules have changed in the favor of offense. They got rid of the two-line pass, the way, so there are some other things, and look, I haven't looked at that stuff in a long time, but there are a number of rules that I think they try to get more offense, so that's a kind of an unbelievable feat as well, the number of goals that he scored. But yeah, Secretariat is Secretariat.
So I think I was thinking of the long jump, which is Mike Powell set it in 1991. So it stood for, what is that, 30 years?
I was born in 91. I'm 29.
8.95 meters. So that's like 27 feet.
And every record, I'm just trying to see. And every record, yeah, that's bonkers. It's bonkers. Where was I? I had Corey Connors as well. Good.
Real quick, what's the most unbreakable golf record?
Tiger's cut streak.
Yeah,
I think it's Tiger's strokes gained against the field. Positive strokes gained against the field streak. Have you seen this, Greg?
No. What's the official number?
Guess the number. I don't know it exactly, but
are we talking rounds or tournaments?
Consecutive rounds in a row. Consecutive rounds in a row.
I mean,
straight in a row.
This is like an unbelievable. Well, I know he played 52 straight, 52 consecutive rounds or par or better. So I would say that it's at least 52. So I'm going to go to 75.
Ooh, that's a good guess. I think it was like 93 or 91 or something.
Wow.
Mark Brody did it, and it was 90. It was like 90 something straight rounds where he beat the field average, which is it's impossible. Yeah, you can't do it.
It's just every time. It's every time.
Not one bad bounce. WGCs,
majors, major weekends. It's impossible. You cannot do that.
And that's when he played all the hardest courses. So like the 52 consecutive rounds of par or better, it is another one that I don't know if it can ever be. I don't know if it can ever be broken. Because it's just you get bad days and you have hard days, and he went through he overcame all of that. It's just unbelievable.
The DiMaggio hitting streak is the unbreakable one in all of sports, because they don't have to pitch to you. He doesn't even control that. When you start getting into 30s, 40s, they're not pitch. Nobody wants to be on the highlight reel for the next 100 years. They'll stop pitching to you.
Yeah.
It's impossible. Dare I say, anything else before we get out of here for the Valspar Championship recap episode?
I think the most unbreakable golf record might be Cameron Tringali's $13.8 million without winning a tournament.
No, that'll happen. There'll be a time when that's a year.
It'll have to be it'll have to be adjusted for inflation, right? Because the purses are going to get so much larger.
That might be like third. That might be third place at the players in a couple of years. Right? 13.
There was. There was one other thing that I had that I'm gonna like be laying in bed tonight, regretting that I can't remember what it is. But I guess
$14 million is going to be the award for a good tweet in 2 years.
Wow.
I hope so.
There's going to be. I can't wait for the tweets that are like, or like someone's going to win more via the pip than a lot of guys make for playing golf.
Yeah, it's going to happen. It's probably going to happen this year.
And it definitely
not often gotten. You're probably not going to get to 8 million. And if Tiger wins this year, it's not even. He's going to win 8 million more than he did on the course.
Do you think gun to your head? Do you think DJ knows what the pip is? Like if you went up to him tomorrow and was like, "Hey, can you give me just anything in the ballpark of what the pip is?" Do you think he could give it to you?
Yeah, one. I think he could give you one thing.
He could not. He'd be like, "Oh yeah, they're giving it out for people who like you know move the needle or whatever." But if you ask him to name two of the bullet points or one of the bullet points of the criteria that goes into it, zero chance.
Yeah,
zero.
That's fair. That's fair.
I agree.
These are the best ones. All right. That'll do it for the recap episode for this week's Valspar Championship. Let me thank producer Jacob. He does all the hard work behind the scenes. Let me thank Greg Ducharme, who you can find on Twitter at TheRealGFD. Let me thank Kyle Porter, who you can find at KylePorterCBS, and you can find me at RickRunGood. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.